It's live.
Doing it live.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to We Have Thoughts. You've made it to the end of our Conversation with Oscar series. Today, we're talking about women talking. I'm Anna.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Joy.
So Women Talking was written and directed by Sarah Polley. It was based on a novel by Miriam Toews, starring Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, Jesse Buckley, and Frances McDormand. It was nominated for 2 Oscars with Best Picture and also Adapted Screenplay. This is Women Talking. What did we think of this one?
I thought it was great.
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. I want to say, oh, sorry, before we start, this is Crystal, and I've been under the weather lately, so I might not talk as much. So, yes, there you go.
Got her sexy Phoebe Buffay voice.
I don't feel that way. I feel terrible. So this woman will not be talking as much, but she liked the movie. And I did enjoy it. I thought it was good. Very well directed. Sarah Polley should have been there. That is a travesty among travesties. Mm-hmm. Y'all talk and I'll interject. Go ahead.
So I read this book.
Mm-hmm.
I literally finished it, I think, like, the day before nominations came out.
Oh.
And then the day nominations came out, I went and saw this later that day. So it was a really great adaptation, I thought. I've also read another book by Miriam Toews, which, okay, so it's called All My Puny Sorrows. I read it because I thought it said All My Punny Sorrows. And I thought it was going to be a little lighthearted laugh of the time. It was not.
You know what's funny, Anna, is, like, you, for someone who reads a lot, you misread a lot of things.
You read fast.
She's a speed reader.
Punny and puny, those aren't words that are written a lot. Punny's not even a word.
So you change the word in your head to a word that doesn't even exist.
I read it, like, 10 years ago, okay? Almost 10 years ago.
Just trying to clarify. I got it.
Incredible.
It has to do with, like, suicide. So it was not punny at all. Actually, it was quite humorous. It had a lot of humor in it. But that was where I first learned about Mennonites. I had never heard of Mennonites before I read that book. And so I remember reading it and also looking up Mennonites. And so it was funny. While I was reading this book, I was like, oh, man, this reminds me of when I first learned about the Mennonites with that one book that I missed, that I got wrong. And I looked it up. I was like, oh, it's the same author. Of course. One thing that I think was a great change from book to screen was the book is written all from the perspective of August, which makes sense. He's the only one that can write. So it's literally like his log that he's taking during the meeting. And then there's like a little bit of before and a little, there's like before the meeting, during the break, and then the second part of the meeting. But I really liked that the movie made it from the narrator was one of the little girls. I thought that was really great.
Mm-hmm. I had forgotten what this movie was going to be about. And then I watched it today and I was like shaken. And I was like, oops, didn't realize it was about this. But it does such a great job of like weaving so many things together. I know it kind of like, it could very easily read like a play, But I like that about it because Sarah Polley, the director, knew when to be on what actors and when to have like multiple people in shots. She was very calculated in how she had like arranged people and who was in the scene and what reactions you were getting from certain women. And I love that because like obviously in a play you would see everybody, which is great. But I love the emphasis that she used, and she really, really knew her actors, and she really was able to like pull these performances out of them. Mm-hmm. Because we've talked about it on the podcast many times. Rooney Mara is Rooney Mara, and she does a thing, and woo, awards get thrown at her. This is the first time that I was actually impressed by Rooney Mara's acting. I was like, oh my God, she learned how to act. Good job, girl. Not like in a... Not to be like that harsh, but like, no, she like really was really good. Like, I believed her sensitivity. I believed her introspection. I believed her dreaminess, her insightfulness. I really was like believing her character and like, and how she was feeling. And it felt genuine. It came across the screen. I think it's the most that I've ever felt a connection to any of her characters. Considering that I loved Carol, like, why couldn't she bring this to Carol? If she brought this to Carol, like, it would have been perfect. But, like, she really did a good job. And, like, the whole ensemble did. But I was just very surprised and very thrown off. I was like, Rooney Mara. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I loved how, even though it's, you know, set mainly in this, like, barn loft and it's just these certain people having conversations, it still felt cinematic. You still felt and that's a testament to the actors. Like every actor in that scene is, in all those scenes, there's giving everything. Like Jesse Buckley is great. Frances McDormand, when she's there for a little bit, is really great. And they're really, oh my God, what is her name? Not Rooney Mara.
Claire Foy,
yes, sorry. Claire Foy and Ben Whishaw, like, everyone is just, it's all, even the older ladies are, I loved how they represented a different part of the sides of thinking of that, and how from the youngest girl to the oldest woman, everyone's opinion mattered, and everyone, like, they gave equal space each for them to talk, and, yeah, I just Sarah Polley. Wow, but she really knows what she's doing.
She does.
I completely agree. I think there was such a really beautiful grounded community that you felt throughout the entire film. Even though we don't see much outside of the barn, and we don't see characters much outside of the barn, like we don't see any of the men really. We don't see. We don't see a lot of things, but you still, it felt all very integrated in there. Sorry, I was just rereading my notes because I made them 6 weeks ago. so I will say that by removing August's point of view, you don't get a lot of insight into the men in the village and a lot of their thinking and a lot of, he gives a lot of insight onto the other men in the village. And it's even implied that the head, I don't know what they're called, the head guy of the village, might be August's father from an affair he had with August's mother. And that's why he was partially why they were thrown out, because they were about to be discovered. So August was thrown out of the community, went to college, had this life, and then became very depressed and despondent and came back. So that, I think a little bit of that would have been nice. It wasn't necessarily needed. It just would have added a little bit more texture. But still really great.
I was really pleasantly surprised by the script and the screenplay. There's so many good, great lines that I wrote down because they just like, they really just like hit me in the face. Again, we've talked about Sun here before. I come from a religious upbringing, so this is very interesting to see like people that are still people that are within certain religious communities, especially like uber conservative with so many rules and regulations on them, like this one. One of the lines I think Rooney Mara says, if forgiveness is forgiveness that's forced upon us, true forgiveness, if we're forced to make that choice, like, is that really, is that true forgiveness? Can we really be genuine in our forgiveness? Or like she says later, do we need time away from it? And then maybe I'll pity them. And then maybe someday I forgive them. I just thought that was like a beautiful line. And I know that we've talked about it a little bit before, but it made me think of those conversations that we had in the context of forgiving someone on their deathbed. Like, it does it really, is it real forgiveness? Does it really count? Or are we just doing it to give them some sort of comfort? Like, we don't validate it. So very, very interesting lines in here.
I loved that this was probably the first time these women were ever questioning the scripture. And this is the first time they were ever really questioning, at least out loud, they were questioning the way in which they do things, the way in which their lives have been. I thought that was very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of great conversations there were. I mean, the whole thing really was a really great conversation. And I think if anybody has been involved in an organization, a religious organization, and has left, not to these extremes that they're going through, but you understand those conversations of, well, this is who I was, but is it who I am now? You know, do I apply those things that I learned to this thing that's happening to me? You know, it's they don't necessarily make religion the villain. It's just more of like, because they're even trying to deal with it within their own beliefs. Like, they're singing the hymns, and that when that scene they're singing the hymn to the little girl was so moving. And they're trying to say, like, it when I'm blanking all their names and I just saw the movie. They're speaking to the older ladies and they're like, you know, not only the men and the boys have been excellent students, to say that the older women have been, you know, not even paying attention, letting it get by, and just it's so well written and really great. I think I just love a movie where people are just acting and just having like good talks, and that's probably why I don't have a lot of notes, because I was just so enthralled with everything that was happening.
Yeah, that was one of my big notes. Was it was Jesse Buckley who was saying it to her mother. She's like, men aren't the only good learners, we learned it from you. And her mother's apologizing, saying, I taught you to accept this behavior. Mm-hmm. I thought that was so powerful and so moving, because as we all know, cycles of abuse happen generation to generation. And we don't know for sure if her father was abusive to her mother, but she taught her that the man is right, the man is good, and we need to listen and obey him. Nothing he does is wrong. And so, beautiful moment of breaking the cycle.
Yeah, and it's so, that's one of the things that I think sets this film apart from other films that tackle kind of similar subject matter, is it's multi-generational. You hear it from the teenagers, you hear it from the moms, and then you hear it from the elders, the elder women of the community. And you don't see that a lot in films, especially talking about this heavy subject matter. It reminds me of, not that they're talking about the same things, but the movie Real Women Have Curves with America Ferrera from like 2004. And they're talking about like body image and body acceptance. And she sees herself and her body in one way growing up as a teenager in like the early 2000s. But her mother, being raised in a different way, coming from a different country, had a certain level of expectation set on her body by her mother. And you hear you get the perspective of like these other women that work in the workshop with them. And it's just so great because you see so many different ages and so many different like generational perspectives. And I think a lot of the times when we're talking about, you know, things that affect women, we forget that, or maybe we don't forget, but we don't actively include people of other generations, people of other ages. Because, like, you know, teenagers are dealing with it now, as have we, as have our mothers, as have our grandmothers before that. So, like, it's something that's affected all of us in different ways, just depending on like where we were raised, how we were raised culturally, and like what our ages were, because there's different cultural standards at each of these ages. So it's so interesting, and I love that they gave that perspective, and everybody, like you said, everybody was able to speak, and everybody was kind of able to say their piece. So it's just really, really felt very genuine, felt very like real in that.
Yeah.
I also loved how even within this small community, they're open to Melvin and in his, you know, I guess response to what happens to him and how he chooses to be mute. And, you know, I think she says like Melvin always felt that he was different or something like that. I can't remember. And yeah, there's a couple of them that are like, just speak, just shut up and or just talk. And some are like, you know, whatever. Even the like towards the end when Melvin's like, thank you for using my name, like just small acknowledgement. Like even within the small community of these women who don't have any, you know, way to communicate to the outside world, even they can get behind like someone who recognizes themselves as something different than them.
Yeah, I just very interesting and very like a great like counterpoint to what they're dealing with and how some of them are talking about the situation itself. I think it brings up a lot of like very valid points. I think it talks about things that we've already heard and perspectives that we've already heard, especially when they're talking about even if certain men were not the attackers, they still upheld the circumstances and the environment for those attacks to take place, and therefore they're also responsible. And the same thing is like, you know, when everything was coming up about Me Too, like, who can be held culpable for this? Because they upheld these standards, they let people get by, they knew about it but didn't really do anything about it. So, you know, it's very interesting. And especially because in this community they have them, the males and the females separate, you know, they're getting so many other privileges of like being able to learn and be educated and all these other things, but they're still have this very like strict set of rules of like, this is what manhood is. This is what you, this is how you should behave. This is something normal that you should want and that you should take. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. In the novel, there's a large portion, and I can't remember if it's in the book. There's a big talk about power and how the men have this power and the abuse of this power. And how they knew what was happening, and they were convinced, they were gaslighting these women into believing it was the devil and ghosts that were attacking them in their sleep. Which for religious women, uber religious women, I'm sure they're thinking it's something that they're doing wrong mm-hmm. that is causing this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine. I assume, again, I don't remember. I assume it's in, like, the, what is it called when there's just text on the screen before or after a film? But it's acknowledged that this was based on real events, right?
I think in the beginning?
It's in the beginning when they say it, but do they say it based on real events?
Because this happened to a real Mennonite community.
No, yeah, but did it say it was?
I don't think it addresses it directly in the film, in the beginning. But well, like,
who don't know, it happened in 2009. Mm-hmm. 2009 in a Mennonite community, I think in Bolivia?
Yeah, it was Bolivia.
Insane.
Then sorry, go ahead.
No, that was the end of that thought.
I was reading an article about it when I was researching for this, and that the judge who convicted the men who got convicted got 25 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
That was it, you know, whatever. And then apparently that judge just came out in the last couple of years saying that there's a lot of people that are supporting them and want them to be released from jail and say that they didn't do anything wrong and blah, 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 blah. So far, none of them have been released. But like 25 years is nothing considering they were serial rapists. That they should be
2-year-old or 3-year-old, however. In the book, she was a little bit younger than she was in the film. Baby.
4 in the movie.
She's 4 in the movie, and then in the real life community that happened to, the youngest was 3. And the oldest was, I believe, 67.
That was truly disturbing. Those scenes where it's not, I do appreciate that any lesser director would have been very graphic in showing scenes like that, but it was just enough for us to get to feel how scared it was for them to wake up and see that, to come to and to realize what had happened. I have had a recurring nightmare of my teeth falling out. So the scene where she's looking at her teeth really freaked me out a lot. That was very scary. But like horse drink wazers, oh my God. That's so bad.
And it's worse because, like, they were doing this for years, and they had, like, a whole system in place. And, like, they taught us, presumably, they taught these other men to the way that they did it. And, like, the article that I read, they had some more graphic details I won't go into. But, like, they were literally trained. They were told how to do this, the way to go about it. There was, like, a formula for it, which is just, like, beyond disgusting. Like, you're already doing this to these women, and then, like, it's so common and so normal that you have, like, a plan, like, a step plan of how to do it. And then, like, gaslighting them into believing, like, oh, like, now I gotta question my faith because I think I'm a bad person. And then, like, the way that men in particular weaponize religion and weaponize, like, different faiths is so fucking disgusting, and it's so prevalent literally everywhere in the world. And just like the things that they can get away with just because they're like claiming God or claiming religion or whatever, it's just so, it's horrible. And like, it's really difficult, and you can see it in these women that like they were born into this, they grew up in this. So like, not all of them have the same thought of like, okay, this is wrong and we gotta leave and we gotta run. Like, they all have these different reactions to it depending on, like, you know, their level of faith, how much, you know, how long they've been in there. Like, it's so complex, and I'm glad the movie doesn't do a disservice of, like, narrowing it down to just, like, one thing, one perspective. And it did a really good job of telling these stories.
Yeah, they do a really good job of painting a picture that it's not easy. It's clearly terrible what they're doing, but leaving everything you know is hard. Mm-hmm. And especially Claire Foy, who has a son who is of that age. And whenever they're asking Vin Wishaw, like, you're their teacher, do you think that they're capable of these things? And he goes, yeah, but they can be taught to not. They can be taught to be better. They can be taught to respect and all these other things. And I think that's a really great message, because they can be taught. All this is taught. This isn't
something
you were born to do, and it's not, you know, it's the way of God or whatever, like you said, weaponizing religion. They can be taught to be good people.
And that's, like, that's one of the things that's, like, the people who think, like, oh, it's just, like, that's just how they are. They're just men. They're just boys. They're made that way. Like, think about what that means in context. You think that, like, men are inherently evil and incapable of change and just, like, fucking monsters. You're saying every man in your life is like that. Like, it's just vilifying everybody. And, like, unfortunately, you know, society creates these environments where things like this thrive, especially in this one in particular. But, like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like racism. Racism isn't like you're just born racist. No, you learn it, and you learn it at a very young age. as soon as you start becoming conscious and like analyzing people's behaviors, even like as like a toddler, like a little kid, some things start making sense in your brain and you start connecting things together and you start making patterns. And like, especially the things that your parents do, the things that your elders do, the people that you look up to. If these boys are growing up around all these men that hold these values, of course, that's what they're going to think is right. Of course, they're going to become that way. But if they don't have someone like Ben Whishaw, a teacher there to tell them otherwise, they'll just end up the same.
And what infuriates me about the boys will be boys or whatever line is then that means the reverse is true and that girls will be girls or women will be women. So you're saying like we're weak, that we deserve this because it happened to us? Like that, it angers me. I do want to point out Kate Hallett, who played the young daughter of Jesse Buckley. I think she was a standout. I thought she was fantastic in this.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed her performance.
Yeah. That's one of those that like she did so much. And like every time it cut to her, it was like there was a reason why. Mm-hmm. And I love that she was, Jesse Buckley's daughter. And it gives it all of that context, especially like when the husband comes back for that one night, like you understand, her environment and how she grew up, and it's just she did such a great job with that.
But also her willingness to do what needed to be done. Like she got hit because she knew she had to get the horses. So mm-hmm. she did what needed to be done, and they were trying. I forget who it was. They trying to like blame it on Jesse Buckley's character or like letting mm-hmm. him hit her, and she's like, I did it because we needed it. So it's okay. Like
bravery they had.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, that shows you the younger generation is going to fight harder.
Yeah. And I do like how it shows how their strength is different than the older generation's strength. And together they can be the strongest. I really, really like that. It's a really great, like, when we work together, we can accomplish anything message. And I think that's really beautiful. Not just women, but like people when they put their heads together and really are talking. And because even when they're talking in the barn, they end up laughing because someone makes a joke or something. Or when Jesse Buckley says like, hold on, I wrote it down. She says something fuck or whatever. And the girl goes, it's fuck off, I think. Just to correct her, like little things like that. It's just really funny and cute. Because I think they love and respect each other so much that they can have these conversations out loud and honestly. And I think that's why they're so strong.
One of my favorite moments that had me unexpectedly very emotional, because it was just mentioned in the book, but watching them all vote.
Yes.
I thought that was so moving, and it's so rudimentary. It's just the piece of paper on the table. They go in there, make their mark. I thought it was so beautiful.
Yes, so because moving. You're right. Like also, even this single shot of moving the people into the barn and then going into the barn and then going over the thing where there's the voting, that was beautifully shot. It does a really good job of establishing what's happening, how many people are there, how big the vote is, like the close-ups of the pencil, like all of that was so well directed.
And to think that these women had like 48 hours to do all of this, because those men were only arrested to save their lives because Claire Foy was out for some vengeance. So the leader of the group had all of the men arrested so they could be put somewhere safe. He was protecting them by having them arrested. It's the only reason they were gone. So they knew they had a finite amount of time to figure out what everybody wanted to do. And then to figure out how they were going to do it. Like, the power of women.
Also, like, that's narratively really smart to have them on a time mm-hmm. limit. You know, because they're uneducated, but yet they're motivated. And they're passionate. Mm-hmm. And they're angry. And they're sad. And they're all these emotions. And that's going to motivate them to get things they have to get done in this small amount of time. Narratively, that's really, really smart.
Yeah. And, like, it reminds me of one of the lines that Claire Foy had, If God is a loving God, then he will forgive us himself. If God is a vengeful God, then he has created us in his image. It literally says in the Bible, he has created you in his image. So whatever I'm capable of, he's capable of. If this is what I want to do, this is what should be done. She had every right to.
One of my favorite lyrics ever is in a Laura Marling song called Failure. And she says, if he made me in his image, then he's a failure too. I love that.
You know, I when the sax came on, I hadn't seen this movie yet. And had this won over everything, I would have been like, you know what? Yeah. Because everyone in this movie was top notch. Every single last one of them.
Claire Foy's anger was so palpable.
Mm-hmm.
They all did so good, but her anger in particular, I felt the fire that she was burning.
Because you can see that she has so much to say, but doesn't know how to verbalize it very well. So yeah. she doesn't know how to process the anger she has inside of her. And she's such a great actress. Oh my God.
Yeah, they've never been given the space to voice these things, voice anything really. Yeah. So at this time, I love this movie. I thought it was so good.
And especially because one of the elders was saying that the their community, their faith is based in pacifism. And now she's got all this violent rage to her. Like it's so against everything that she was taught. And yet it's fully like she's enveloped in this like rage. It's so contradictory to what she knows. And it's like Claire Foy did such a great job of putting that on screen.
And kind of harking back to what you were saying earlier about Rooney Mara, I loved how subtle it was and how like calm and still she was throughout the entire thing. You have Jesse Buckley and Claire Foy being these louder, more fiery voices. And then you have Rooney Mara, who's just like kind of whimsical and a little dreamy and a little very calm, and she it's like she already knew what was gonna happen. So I loved the way she brought like philosophy and like philosophical questions into it. I really enjoyed her performance in this.
Very well balanced as far as characters go.
Yeah, because Jesse Buckley is equally angry as Claire Foy, but in a different way. And like, that's another thing that the movie addressed really well, is the internalized misogyny of being a victim of abuse. And like the reason why it's so hard and people don't understand why it's so like, well, why don't they just leave? Like they're being mistreated. They should just go. But they don't understand that like this person, when they abuse you physically, it's also psychological. It's also emotional. And especially growing up in this kind of community, like, they have very deep internalized misogyny. And then plus her mother told her this is what she's supposed to do. Like everything in her life is telling her that she needs to stick by it, that she needs to go through it, that this is just life. And so her like finally coming to terms with like the best thing we need to do is leave. It was such a great arc.
There's a lot of emotions in what, 48 hours or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just imagine your life is uprooted and everything you think you know is right is wrong. That's a lot to take. I'd be mad too.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And for obvious reasons, Near My God to Thee is like the saddest thing. And then they're singing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was already crying, but let's just add on the tears, I guess, more.
Anybody immediately think of Titanic when they hear that song?
Well,
I thought of Titanic.
But well, yes, but also like I've heard the hymn before sung, like in the choral experience, and it's gorgeous. It's just a pretty, it's a sad, beautiful melody anyway. But
yeah,
we love a sad song.
Yeah, we do. We really do. Also, like how Ben Whishaw was showing. Rooney Mara, like, how to make a fist for, like, navigation. And I was like, oh, also for, like, empowerment. I like that.
Yeah, I know. The shots are so cute.
I love it. I'm trying to think if I have any other notes. Oh, I have Jesse Buckley rolling her eyes. I love that part. I forgot who was saying, but she was just like, whatever. I don't know what it's about, but it was really funny. I laughed.
I really enjoyed the color palette and, like, the filters used on this. I thought it made you feel like you were in another time, that it could be any time.
It's funny you say that, because every review I was like, what is this color grading? This sucks.
Yes, everyone else hated it, but I was like, no, I'm down with it. I like it.
Everyone was like, what is happening? Yeah. They're like, it's art. It's supposed to look like that or whatever. It's funny.
I enjoyed it. I thought it...
Same.
It kind of fit the moodiness of it.
Well, I had it switched over differently from Top Gun Maverick. And so it didn't look right for the colors that I have for Top Gun Maverick. So I had it switched over. So the beginning, I was like, why does this look like weird? But anyways, but that was me because I changed it over.
Oh, man. Another great. What?
I don't mean, just keep going, sorry.
Oh, okay. No, I think the last, some of the last lines I had on here is, who are any of you to pretend to say I had a choice? From Jesse Buckley. And the way she delivers that was just like, I'm dead.
I'm in love with her.
She's great.
I can't have her current haircut, but whatever, she's talented, so she'll get a pass.
She has a bad haircut? What's wrong with her haircut?
It's just orange and in a weird bang bob situation. It's strange.
I feel like every time I've seen her, she's had a different haircut. Yes. I don't think I've ever seen her in real life.
You saw her walking down the street?
Yeah.
She's so fucking cool. And I also think she's so fucking talented. I cannot wait to continue to watch her career. She's quickly become one of my new favorites.
Is she up there with Saoirse Ronan?
Yeah.
Saoirse Ronan or Jesse Buckley?
Saoirse, just a little bit above.
Okay.
Nice. The one moment where finally things are like, they have a solution, they're leaving, everything's good. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. That is an appropriate time to use that verse. That was valid. It was perfect for the moment. I loved it. I don't think I really got the meaning of that verse until the movie. And then I was like,
oh, wow.
Wow.
Also, like how, and even at the very end, Frances McDormand's daughter managed to be brave enough to walk away. Because that was probably hard for her, too.
In the book, Claire Foy's character uses the horse tranquilizer on her son, like she does in the movie. She also uses it on Frances McDormand's character and throws her in the wagon. She goes, she'll thank me later.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But I do like that they, like, that she stayed there because it was a good juxtaposition to, like, what everybody else was doing.
That's true. That's real to life.
Yeah.
You can't always convince everyone.
Yep. Exactly. It's just so well done. It's just so good. It's just so good. And I thought this movie has thrown off what I thought my rankings would be. So now I'm like very undecided.
I don't know how this would fit into literature at all, but I feel like if I was a teacher, you ever had to get my students to sign off from their parents, I'd make them watch this in school, because I feel like this is important, having really great, interesting conversations. Mm-hmm. I know sometimes religious is taboo in, you know, certain things, but if we get to talk about it, because, like, not talking about it makes it worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not, like I said, I'm not any type of teacher or anything, but I'm not going to show this to, like, a daycare or nothing like that, but I'm just saying I feel like it should be seen by everyone. Is everyone going to see it? Maybe not, but I think it is.
You are a teacher in a way. You have a young niece who in...
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's true. You know, 10 years' time, you can sit down and watch this movie and you have that conversation with her. And I think about that a lot with my niece. It's like my sister and I have a lot of conversations about, like, how we're going to do things different. And we're going to make sure that she has all the tools and she knows her value from as early on as we can.
Yeah, because this world sucks sometimes.
So I'm really happy that she has, like, us in her life, you know?
And now we're all crying.
No, I was okay until you brought up my niece.
Like, that's, like, the one thing that I really feel like we were, like, called upon to do is really not just, like, not in a general way, trying to make the world a better place for them, for, like, our nieces and nephews and everybody who comes after us, but just, like, if we can educate them at least a little bit, if they can be better off than we were, it's worth it.
And then you get into it, like, well, that's what our parents were trying to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was our intention. Maybe it didn't pan out. But that's what any authority figure is trying to do when they have someone that they love a lot, is just to make their lives better than theirs. Anyways.
Oh my god. Category?
Sure.
Oh my god. I think we can all agree that it deserves to be in the best picture category.
100%. Yes.
We're all sobbing here. Adapted screenplay.
Yes.
Hundo P, baby.
Make it win.
Okay, so since this is the end, we should go through, like, when we go through them, like, should we crown our winner? Like, do you think we should?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Adapted screenplay. Who
adapted? Hold on, let me get there. I'll go for Woman Talking, even though I don't know. I didn't read the source material.
What are the other nominees? Who are the other ones?
Top Gun, Maverick, Living, Glass Onion, and All Quiet on the Western Front.
Fuck everything else. It should be Woman Talking, honestly. That's my winner for adapted.
I agree. I mean, I don't.
Only two out of those five are... Four? Five? One... Three, four, five. Only two out of the five are from, like, a novel or a book. Knives Out
sequels.
Are from sequels, and then Living is a remake of a Kurosawa movie. So I didn't know until this year that sequels counted as adapted. I think that's
the sequels really aren't, like, in the conversation that often. This is, like, pretty.
This is rare.
That's true.
And then for there to be two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you listened at all to our All Quiet on the Western Front, you know how I'm not happy about that novel adaptation.
Did you ever get your copy that you wanted?
Yeah. Well, I got a copy, and it's not the one I thought I would have to get, so I'm happy. It's not the mass paperback, so. Yeah, those are the only two nominations it has, which is
bullshit. No way.
Yeah.
I would have put it down for editing.
I mean, Sarah Pauly should have been director. That was without question. 100%. She should be there.
I am being super stupid nitpicky, but there's one shot in this movie that, like, took me out of it. Because I was like, what the fuck was that? I didn't take my notes in the theater, so I don't have the exact shot, but it's some kind of, I think two characters are looking at each other and it's, like, coming around the back, but there was some kind of weird, like, stop and pop, or it was a bizarre shot. And so for that, I would say Charlotte Wells over Sarah Pauly, but only by, like, a shot.
I don't remember that shot at all. But I do remember, I like the shot of Claire Foy and her son talking on the opposite ends of the fence. I really liked that shot. I thought that was
nice. That was good.
Mm-hmm. And again, with the long shot in the beginning. Yeah, I don't remember that shot at all. But I still think she should be here. She should be here.
Yeah. Who's nominated again?
Ruben Östlund, Todd Field, Steven Spielberg, The Daniels, and Martin McDonagh.
Okay, get rid of Ruben Östlund, obviously. Crystal, you'll be happy to know I finally watched The Woman King.
You did? What did you think?
Oh my god, it was fucking great. It was a trip.
Aren't you mad that Viola Davis and Lynch are not here?
Fucking pissed. I'm so pissed. And I was so justified in fighting for Viola Davis as long as I have, knowing that she could turn out any performance she wants. And it was great. Viola Davis, Shauna Lynch, Sheila Etim, I think her name is, who I love. I don't think anyone saw Halle Berry's directorial debut, Bruised, from like a year or two ago. Sheila Etim was in that. She was fucking fantastic, and I love her.
This should have been a career-making move for LaShawna Lynch, and the fact that it wasn't is ridiculous. Because not only that, she was in Matilda not long after that.
Uh-huh.
She's in the range she has. The range. She's in James Bond, I think, too, right?
Yeah, she was great in James Bond. She was so good. She's
phenomenal, and she kicks ass in every single role that she said. The fact that I'm going to get mad again. I'm going to stop. Let me not.
For best director, I would obviously kick out Ruben Östlund, but I think if I had to pick out someone else, I'd probably kick out Spielberg.
Also same. I think I love Spielberg. I think he should have maybe won last year. But this year, the talent, the caliber of work, the film is just
He's won before, right?
He's won before, I believe. But, like, it's just so high quality that, like, I can't justify keeping him in there just because I love him. I love him.
Yeah, and then also Gina Prince-Blythewood, the direction, those action scenes. Especially gorgeous. Because we watched
the Old Guard.
The Old Guard, which those scenes were great. But it looks like everything we complained about in that movie, she heard us and was like, I got
you. And she fixed it.
And elevated it. Because the Women King's action sequences are phenomenal.
Fabulous. Also, the fact that she was able to keep that PG-13 with all of that happening. Hello, talent. Mm-hmm. She should.
Yeah. Also, she had eye candy for everyone. There was I forgot what the guard is called. The soldiers. I forgot. Eye candy, and then John Boyega over there. John Boyega. Eye candy for
everybody. And then LaShawna Lynch.
Listen, eye candy for everybody's eyes. Mm-hmm. That movie is top-notch. Everyone should watch it. Anyways, seriously. Just not talking about that. Also, Jordan Peele should be here, I think.
God, this category is just so, like, it's such a waste. Like, when we could easily remove two people out of this. I probably could justify a third if I really wanted to.
Who is it?
Martin McDonagh.
That would be my next choice if I had to.
I mean,
If I could fit in Gina Prince-Blythewood, what's her name for this one? Sarah Polley.
Sarah Polley.
And Jordan Peele. And then I'd have what's his name? Todd something.
Todd Peele. And
the Daniels. That would be my five.
Yeah, I would agree because Tar was better directed than Banshees of Inisherin, but I just really enjoy Banshees of Inisherin.
My
three would be Charlotte Wells for After Sun, Park Chan-wook for Decision to Leave, and Jordan Peele for Nope.
That's a great lineup too, actually.
That's really good too.
Yeah,
it was really good this year. It was really good, and it's a fucking travesty that the majority of them got ignored.
The point is, Academy, is you can't say there's no good women directors because there's plenty.
We got three different ones right now.
Fucking rude.
Stop being lazy. All right, next.
For best directors, I put anybody in Women Talking. Because literally, they're all so good.
I would take Rooney Mara's Oscar nom for Carol and give it to her for this.
I would say Claire Foy or Jesse Buckley or the two older women. I don't know their names. I'm sorry.
I'd say the teenage girl.
Yeah. Again, so good.
All of them. Who? Claire Buckley's mom. Claire Buckley. Oh my God.
Jesse
Buckley. Jesse Foy. Her mom.
Charlie Pluth and Charlie Mendes.
The two mothers were played by Judith Ivy, who played Agata, A-G-A-T-A, and Sheila McCarthy, who played Greta. That's the one who lost her teeth.
She was great. She was great.
With her horses.
Also, because you can tell those actresses are, like, they brought their experience of the craft to what was happening. And so even though they didn't have like maybe the most lines or any, they're even the scenes where they're not the focus, they're acting in response. They're
present.
They must have worked in theater because they know what it's like to act the entire time. And that was So anyone in Woman Talking should be nominated, I think. Anyway.
Pretty much. Let's do it. Anyone in Woman Talking or the three supportings in The Woman King. Basically women.
Yeah.
Women.
I mean, yeah, it's really not that hard, everyone. Same for supporting actors. Anyone in Woman Talking?
Supporting actress, I would also, well, no, never mind. I don't know.
Supporting actress, I would take out Jamie Lee Curtis and I'll put in Kiki Palmer. Why not?
Oh, yeah.
For best actress, I would add in, I don't know how to pronounce her name, but the woman from Decision to Leave, Tang Wei?
It's on my watch list. I really want to see it.
I think she was phenomenal.
Did they not submit it for, or did they and it just didn't get make it through?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. You should look up the Oscar International Film Shortlist and see if it's on there.
I feel like it was.
Was a shortlisted for international, yes.
Okay, so then it didn't make the cut then. Okay, all right. Because I know, like, for example, like, even though RRR was a huge hit for, you know, worldwide hit, India didn't submit that film for consideration. So it wouldn't have been able to be nominated for its international feature because they didn't submit it. They submitted something else. Yeah.
I kind of hate the way they do the international feature.
Yeah, the country submits the film.
I hate that the directors or the filmmakers don't win it. The country wins it. I think that's a little bullshit.
I feel like the country owes the directors a little something.
Yeah, so that's why when RRR wasn't nominated, everyone was like, India, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's India's fault. They didn't submit it, which, whatever.
That's so dumb.
Whatever. Although I have a feeling it'll be an Oscar win anyway, to be fair. So, whatever.
I hope so, because I mean, we're going to see it anyways, but.
They're going to perform it. I'm so excited.
I remember the day that they got nominated, the guy who won, or I guess the songwriter, he was like, we're performing. Oscars, call me. We're performing. Like, he was already saying he was going to do it.
It's going to be so good. They're going to be so good in that. That dancing honestly blew me away. Like, the skill, the athleticism, the synchronicity, amazing.
Like, and I've seen enough So You Think live to know that, like, that's not a fast forward. That's legit. Like, they're going that fast. It's nuts. Yes.
Yeah.
That genre of dance is, like, no bullshit. Like, you can't half-ass that at all.
No. You either suck or you're amazing.
Or you die, basically. Because that's...
Break an ankle.
Yeah. I was like, can there be, like, an old person version of this that I could do? Like a... like a slow-mo version? Like, I don't got those knees. I don't got the... I can learn the arm things. I could do the, you know, but not the feet. Like,
I'll just do the hands. My lower body ain't doing nothing.
Oh, my God. It'll be like Sit and Be Fit, but like Bollywood.
I would do it. Okay, next category.
Yeah. Oh, we're just talking, right? Sorry, I don't know. Categories? I mean, yeah. That's any other, so Women Talking, do you think it should be in any other categories other than acting?
I would say editing, probably. Editing, okay. Because that's a big task to have to juggle all of that cast, all of that ensemble, and still be able to do it well with editing. So I would go for editing.
So would you... Hold on, let me see. Let me see who's nominated.
Film editing is The Banshees.
Thank you.
Elvis, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, Tar, and Top Gun Maverick. Elvis, bye!
Yeah.
Yeah.
For real.
The rest of them are deserving of being there, but Elvis is meh. Why am I?
Oh, joy. I didn't watch the movie, but I listened to the score to Babylon. And it is, to me, it felt like I took jazzy drugs.
And you would be right, because the movie was jazzy drugs.
Like, it was like a little bit like incoherent, but also like it made sense in a way, and it was like at times erratic, but then it like smoothed into something else, and I was like, oh, okay. Like I was like, is this what being on drugs is like? But it was jazzy drugs, so I'm gonna say jazzy drugs. Did I enjoy it? Yeah. Was it too long? Yeah, it was. The score, and because it's just a lot of the same.
The movie's too long too. So
okay, it's a lot of the same vignettes. I was like, okay, well, I just heard this song like two songs ago, so why is this different? But whatever. Is it my favorite of those? No. But anyways, yeah, it was like, oh, okay, I like this. This is interesting. Jazzy drugs.
The ones that are good are like really solid, and yeah, I couldn't describe them any other way other than like they're very all over the place, but also it makes sense.
It's like a controlled chaos a little bit.
Yes, very much, and that's what the movie.
It kind of feels like, it kind of feels like jazz in the way that like Ryan Gosling describes it. Like they're just playing, they're talking to each other, they're having a conversation. They're just, that's what it sounds like in the score. His description of that sounds that. Which also, I went to a jazz club a long time ago and it was great. And that score reminded me of that. I was like, I kind of want to go back because that was really cool.
Let's do that.
It was fun. Because I love me jazz music, I always have.
So what's your pick for original score?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to... Everything. Yeah, I'm going to give it to Everything. Or Banshees, that'd be my second one. Because All Quiet is just like a three notes motif that goes all the way through. And The Fablemans is John Williams doing the same thing over and over again. Banshees, in the same vein as Everything, has character. But Everything is everything. It really just is all the things that you want and need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Everything.
Love that. Anything else?
Did you watch all the costume movies, Joy?
I'm checking right now.
Okay.
Well, of course, I didn't watch all of the cinematography movies, but from what I did see, which is two of them.
Three. No, three. Oh, no, because she didn't see All Quiet.
No.
Oh.
I saw the, like, the GIFs and the screen grabs of it, which did look really nice. I'm going to go with Tar. It should be between Tar and Nope. Nobody... No, I mean, I think Tar and Nope are on the same level, mm-hmm. just doing different things. And the really interesting thing is they're both, like, modern. They're both, like, in this time.
Yeah.
It's not a period piece. It's not, like, you know, paintings. It's just, like, artfully constructed in a modern way. And they both did such a great job of that. It should be Nope. Nope isn't here, so Tar. There you go.
Yes, I think of that scene in where Jean Jacket is like swallowing the people and just like,
ugh.
Like how gross it is, but like how beautiful it is at the same time.
Yes!
Oh my God.
I can't look away because it looks so good, but also I'm dying.
I think of like, because I watched a clip of it later after I saw the movie and I just had it on mute and I was like, oh, this is gorgeous. But then hearing the sounds, I was like, oh no, this is, ugh.
I did that too. When I rewatched the scene, I put it on mute because I was like, I will throw up if I listen to this again. It's not good.
And even as scary and as disturbing as that chimp scene was, it was very well shot as well.
It was. It was the balance. Oh, yeah. The hand reaching out from under the tablecloth. Oh, just fucking great. Like that talent knows no bounds. So yeah, either one of those. Did I see all of costume design? No, I didn't watch Miss Harris Goes to Paris. But I saw pictures of the costumes and they look really good. I don't even know why. Okay, Babylon being in here doesn't make the most sense because like...
They liked Margot Robbie's red dress.
I mean, it was slutty. Yeah, it was cute, but like... and so other people.
Question. Who had the slayest outfit of the movies that you saw, Joy? Go.
Oh my God. It has to be that one. Or Elvis's tight pants.
Okay. All right.
We should
make our own awards one year. We like, slayest outfit.
You know what? Okay. So, like, I think I told Crystal this. I don't know if Anna, we talked about this on the podcast, but like Babylon has the best like secondary stories. Like all the supporting cast I wanted to know more about than like the main cast, which was like the main cast, they were making it out like it was Margot Robbie and Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt was supporting, who cares about him? But like Diego Calva, who played Manny, he was interesting. I'm glad we got more ish of him, but then we got more Margot Robbie. And then there was a jazz singer and then a trumpet player who, if I could get two movies of both of them, man, their stories are so interesting. The jazz singer, she had a really beautiful, like wonderfully tailored, like black tails tuxedo with a top hat. Stunning. That is probably the only reason why it's in this category for her, because she looked amazing.
The white people in the forefront and the people of color in the background? Is that what you're telling me?
That is what Damien Chazelle did yet again. At the very least, the lead was a Mexican man.
Who wasn't on any of the posters.
Who wasn't on? No, that's what I'm saying. Like, they put Brad Pitt before Diego Calva, and he was literally the lead. He was the male lead. Margot Robbie was the female lead. And then everybody else was after that. But who gives a shit? Because fucking Brad Pitt. Fuck off. Like, I don't care about him. It was about Diego Calva and Margot Robbie. But whatever. I'm not about to start yelling about Babylon again. More.
You already are.
I have a lot of thoughts about that. I could record a whole episode, but I won't.
Not do it. Just get on your phone, your voice memo.
We can release it
in like as you have a thought, release it in bits. Episodes. Just bits of joy bitching. And another thing.
Maybe I will.
This season on joy bitching.
Oh my god. I would watch that.
That's a lot of seasons. I can bitch about a lot of things. Movie related, at least.
If we didn't have a podcast at movies, it'd just be us bitching about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's what this is, but like, that's fun.
That's true.
There have been movies where all we did was bitch.
Listen.
Yeah. Those were good episodes.
Yeah. So you're welcome, whoever's listening to this, which is no one.
Our three fans.
I've figured out a way to post our audio boom on my story, so now hopefully people who watch my story will go to it, which they probably won't, but whatever.
I didn't know you could do that until I saw your story. I
figured it out. Nice. On accident.
Hey, we've had already 7 people listen to Triangle of Sadness.
Okay.
Oh. One day.
It's because I'm on that Twitter. Who's the best costumes? You didn't answer the question.
Oh, best costume. Sorry. Best costume. It'll probably go to... I would probably pick Wakanda Forever, honestly.
Yeah.
I know Bruce Carter is super talented and obviously saw what she did in the first movie, which is incredible. And she does her research and she did a really good job. And those little green shorts don't lie, so she gets a win.
Yeah, it's really cool to see the behind the scenes of even... Ludwig Gordonson, like them doing the research of going to Mexico and like meeting indigenous people and instruments they use or the fabrics they use, you know, like
yes.
Not that the other ones don't do that, but just to see them do that was really interesting, especially because those are 2 people who are not of that culture, but they wanted to submerse themselves into it. Very interesting. Yeah,
I respect it and yeah. They did a great job. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we have anything else.
So should we do our rankings?
Oh, yeah. I was about to do like, bye. Oh,
my God. All right, Anna. We'll go in alphabetical order.
No, you go first, Joy.
No, we're going in alphabetical order since that's how we do things.
Fine.
I know you like orders, so.
In number 10, we have... Avatar, The Way of Water.
That's the voice you're giving. It's nice.
And that's Crystal's sexy voice.
In 9th place, we have Elvis. Take my time. I'm just kidding.
Are you waiting for a drum roll or something?
Yeah. 8th, I have Triangle of Sadness. Seventh is Top Gun. Six is All Quiet on the Western Front. Five is Fablemans. Four is Women Talking. Three is Banshees of Inisherin. Two is Tar. And one is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I like it.
All right, sorry. Let me take some water because my throat hurts.
It's subject to change.
Yeah, watch it. Like, I mean, 3 days, it'll be something we're different.
Done with movies, so it's going to change again.
I'm already contemplating switching two.
Okay, all right. I don't think mine are going to change. I think they're pretty much set. So, okay, here we go. Sorry. All right, so number 10, Triangle of Sadness. Number 9, Avatar, The Way of Water. Number 8, Elvis. Number 7, All Quiet on the Western Front. Number 6, The Fablemans. Number 5, Top Gun Maverick. Number 4, Women Talking. Number 3, Tar. Number 2, The Banshees of Inisherin. And number 1, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I love this. I don't think any of ours are the same.
Hold on. I missed. Where did you place Women Talking?
Cuatro.
Same.
Mm-hmm. All right. So number 10 is Avatar, The Way of Water. Surprise, surprise. Number 9 is Elvis. Number 8 is All Quiet on the Western Front. Number 7 is Triangle of Sadness. 6 is The Fablemans. 5 is Top Gun Maverick. 4 is The Banshees of Inisherin. 3 is Tar. 2 is Women Talking. And the top spot is Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Wait, maybe I want to change mine now. Oh, no. Now I'm thinking about it.
Interessante.
I like it. I like that everybody's different.
I think my top five are pretty solid, though. I like my top five a lot.
Be on the lookout for our Instagram, where we'll post our official final rankings.
Our final final.
Which will change again, probably.
It will change on Sunday. Sunday at like 7 o'clock.
Final for you bitches.
Our fans. In our heads, it's always.
Oh, right. I was like, who's the bitches? Me? That's fine. I guess.
The best bitch.
Yeah, bitch.
I guess.
All right, guys. Year 6 in the can. We did it.
Wow. 6 years, really?
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
The shit is holy. You're right.
I mean, it is. The women were talking.
We did talk.
We did. And we.
I love how the movie is quite literally women talking. I love that.
Yes. That's the best.
That was fantastic. Maybe it should be up higher. I'll think about it. No, but it's below Tar, which was like art. Okay. I'll close the book because I don't want to look at it anymore. I'll stop.
If our group chat name wasn't Triangle of Sadness, it could also be Women Talking.
Oh my god. Or we Triangle of Women Talking.
Triangle of Women Talking. We are a Triangle of Women Talking.
We are also a Triangle of Sadness.
A Triangle of Women Talking Sadness? No, because we talk a more than sadness.
Triangle of Women Talking.
Huh?
A sad triangle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. I knew I couldn't fit in there. Yeah, a sad triangle. That's amazing. I'm gonna write this down. We're sad triangle.
Not all quiet. That's not us. I feel like we can definitely be Everything Everywhere All at Once.
We could be Banshees.
We could also be the Banshees.
What's our band name?
Of Women Talking.
The Banshees. Sad triangles, women talking.
The sad triangle of women talking. That's my favorite thing that's ever happened in this entire podcast. I wrote it down. It's a video.
All right. If you've listened this far, thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
Or if not, you maybe fell asleep. Wake up.
Thanks for following along. 10 episodes. We did it. We'll be back to talk about this show on Monday. Hopefully we'll have that posted Monday. So yeah, look out for that, and we'll see you next year. Bye.